Good morning. Welcome to the Community Voice. I'm Steve Gradick, your host. Delighted to have you with us. We're thankful to our sponsors, Tanner Health System and Oak Mountain Academy. Well, we're very pleased to have in studio another candidate for United States Congress, 3rd Congressional District, one that we haven't had on before. We've had all of them on at least once, and Jim Bennett actually three times. In studio today is Brian Jack. I'm going to give you an intro. Now, this is from his website, BryantJack.com. Bryant Jack is one of President Trump's most trusted allies who has worked by his side for the last 8 years to make America great again. A sixth-generation Georgian, Brian was raised in Fayette County and is a graduate of Woodard Academy, where he played basketball and baseball. With an early passion for service in his community, Brian spent his summers doing college work at Peachtree City Hall, helping build the city's comprehensive plan. Following graduation from Pepperdine University, Brian pursued a career in advocacy for conservative values, working for Dr. Ben Carson and the movement to strengthen the United States-Israel relationship. 2016, Brian joined President Trump's campaign, where he led the effort to defeat the never-Trump opposition during the contentious Republican primaries. Brian worked in the White House from the first to the last day of President Trump's administration. President Trump appointed Brian to serve as the White House political director responsible for implementing the President's America First agenda. Brian worked by President Trump's side to stop illegal immigration, pass historic tax cuts, confirm conservative judges, and eliminate needless regulations. Inspired by the generations before us who made our country great, Brian is a member of the Georgia Historical Society, the Fayette County Historical Society, and the Sons of the American Revolution. Brian is also a passionate fan of Georgia sports teams, from the Atlanta Braves to Peachtree City's semi-pro soccer team. And that's website with that. And there are a couple more things that we're going to mention, but that's the website introduction. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you. Thank you.
Thank you for coming in. The show will go fast. We only have 25 minutes, and as much as I'd like to talk about President Trump for 25 minutes, we're going to talk a little bit more about Brian Jack and your candidacy. The first question is my question. Why in the world would anybody want to give up a role in the White House to become a freshman congressman?
Well, first, thank you for having me. As you mentioned toward the end of that bio, I'm a huge sports fan, so it's a privilege to be in the hometown of the number one recruit in the 2025 college football class, and excited to see what the team does this year. Although I will say, Carrollton plays Woodward in August, and that's my alma mater, so obviously be cheering for my War Eagles on that night. But
well, you can cheer, but it won't do you any
probably
good.
Probably will not. So, no, I had the privilege, as you noted in my introduction, of serving President Trump from the very first to last day of his administration. But one of the things that I saw, especially that first year in 2017, if you think back to what the issues were of the day, for the first 8 or 9 months, we in President Trump's administration pursued healthcare reform. And some Republicans did not stand with him in that initiative, and it ultimately was not successful. And I think that awakened a lot of us that President Trump needs more allies in Congress. He needs more folks to help implement his America First agenda. And he's got, you know, 4 years, but in reality, from the moment he gets in, from 2025 to 2027, that this next Congress, these next 2 years are critical, because, you know, once you get into 27 and 28, people like you and I will be sitting here talking about the 28 presidential primaries before you know it. So I say that because I think Congress is President Trump is in need of a more favorable Congress that can help him enact that America First agenda. And I think that agenda helped make our district a whole lot better over those 4 years.
I don't really trust Wikipedia, but it says basically that you were President Trump's liaison to Congress. And I understand also you at one point you worked for former Speaker McCarthy.
Yeah, so from 2018 to 2019. 2019, I was appointed White House political director. For the last 5 years, I've been President Trump's liaison to Congress. And my job was to help navigate his agenda, push it through Congress. And then after the administration ended, I worked with people like Kevin McCarthy, people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, people like Byron Donalds, people like Steve Scalise, to ensure that we did the one thing that mattered most in 2022, and that was fire Nancy Pelosi. And we did it. President Trump doesn't get enough credit for it, but we went across the country campaigning every which way in every district you can imagine to make sure that we took back the House. Didn't have the margins that I think we all hoped for, but I can tell you our country's a much better place today without Nancy Pelosi as Speaker.
I do want to, as I mentioned, want to try to focus really on Congress if you should be elected. If you should be elected, what committees would you go after to serve on?
Well, I think, you know, I don't want to let the cart get ahead of the horse, but I think that this district has a history of members of Congress being on good committees. I worked for Len Westmoreland early in my career, and he served on T&I and Transportation and Infrastructure. Drew Ferguson's on Ways and Means. I think that transportation has a unique connection to our district. Obviously, a lot of our district depends on the Atlanta Airport, a lot of Delta employees, but also you've got the Columbus Airport in it. Some potential interstate projects that could be coming in. So certainly some interest there. But ultimately, I think, you know, you want to reflect the will of the people and you want to ensure that you're doing what you can to make your district a better place if you're elected to Congress. So I'd be open to any and all suggestions.
Would you join the Freedom Caucus if you were elected?
So I've said this before. I'm not opposed to it. But at the same time, I think I'd want to survey the district, see what the district thinks about it. I don't want to hand my voting card over to anybody. I want to have the freedom and the ability to vote the way the district wants me to. But I've been proudly endorsed by Jim Jordan, the founder of the Freedom Caucus, and certainly expect my voting record to align with the more conservative members of the House.
This is my favorite question, so bear with me. How would you determine whether you voted yay or nay on a piece of legislation?
So my thing, and I say this a lot, and maybe I'm a little bit more populist, but I like... If you've got an important vote coming up, I think you should come down to your district, you should have town halls, and you should hear from your constituents directly about what they think about an issue. I also think you should look at the Constitution. I mean, that should be your first and utmost priority. But I think that more members of Congress should spend more time asking the citizens that they represent what they think on issues. And I think that you'll see a much more engaged population if you do so. And I think it could also be an inspiring and exciting thing for the district to feel like they've got a voice and that their member of Congress actually cares about what they think.
How about this? Can we afford it? Do we need it? Is it constitutional and is it moral? And if you go through that list, basically you're going to end up voting no on quite a big, large number of legislation. Voting no, is that a problem?
No, I mean, I think that at the end of the day, again, it depends on what your district. You have to have a good pulse of your district. To your point, that litmus test you just walked through, I think aligns and reflects what this district would want. But ultimately, I think that, you know, you got to be comfortable saying no. You got to be comfortable saying yes when the time is right. But ultimately, you've got to do what your district wants you to do, and that's why they elected you.
How do you view the district? Because it's basically from the border of Atlanta to or portions of Metro down to some of the more rural areas of Georgia.
I think our district is so uniquely positioned to thrive economically over the next 6, 8, 10 years. It's unbelievable the investment you're seeing from out of state. You've got Remington moving down to LaGrange. You've got a great semiconductor pitch. If you go to United Way down in Columbus, what they're trying to do, bringing semiconductor industry in. You've got, you know, you have enormous growth. You've got Freyer Battery coming into Noonan. Everybody wants to move to Georgia to do business, and a lot of people want to move to our congressional district to do business because we've got a great place. Everybody enjoys the way of life, and at the same time, all I care about is making sure that our district thrives and can move forward. And I think at the end of the day, that's the most important thing that a member of Congress can do is be an effective ambassador for this district.
Our guest this morning is Brian Jagg, brianjagg.com. We're on Community Voice. We're also on News Talk 1330 Facebook page if you'd like to watch there. We'll be back with more of Brian after this.
Health is a journey. It's making better choices, even when it's not easy. It's taking care of yourself and the people you love. At Tanner Health System, we're there for you with every step, with primary care, heart care, cancer care, women's care, orthopedics, surgical services, and so much more. We're dedicated to helping you live and feel your best. So let's get on that journey to health. You've got places to be for many years to come. Find us at Tanner.org.
Oak Mountain Academy is an innovative school of academic excellence celebrating over 61 years. I'm Patrick Curran, head of school, inviting you to join us on the mountain to see our mission and vision in action. Academic excellence, a faith-based environment, and dynamic opportunities are just a few of the reasons our families choose Oak Mountain Academy. Academic scholarships and tuition assistance are available. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Community Voice. I'm Steve Reddick, your host. Delighted to have you with us. We're on Facebook Live, and we have congressional candidate, District 3, Bryant Jack, in his debut appearance here on the Community Voice. Glad to have him in. Before we jump into to the national topics, Drew Ferguson, how do you think he did overall?
I think that Drew, first off, I mean, rose up in leadership pretty quick. Last 8 years, I'm thinking it was elected in 2016, which is crazy to think it was just 8 years ago. But ultimately, I think that, you know, the voters reelected him four times. And I think that that shows that that's the most important scorecard and record he can possibly have. He elected not to run for reelection, gave the five candidates in this race, all of whom are good people, gave us a chance to succeed him. So excited to have this opportunity and wish him well in his next endeavor.
Okay, let's jump into it. Before we get to immigration and inflation, since you were with the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, the news this weekend is President Biden is withholding precision weapons, which were approved by Congress, for Israel as the issue going into Rafah. Your thoughts on that?
So I'm glad you asked that question. I, as you mentioned in your interview, or in the opening, I worked for President Trump for 4 years in the White House from the first to last day of his administration. And a lot of people ask me today, they see what's going on in the Biden White House, and they say, Brian, you know, what's actually happening there? You worked at the White House for 4 years. Surely you must know. And what I do know is that under President Trump, he was by far and away the sole decider and decision maker, but more importantly, he was in the Oval Office. He was omnipresent in the Oval Office. He was always down there. Joe Biden is in the Oval Office at maximum 1 or 2 hours today, a day. So what's happening those other 22 or 23 hours? You have unelected staff appointed by Joe Biden dragging his administration as far left as they possibly can and driving wedges between our allies. You mentioned Israel, strongest ally in the Middle East. It is a relationship that is under siege. And I think one of the challenges that we're going to continue to find is that administration is going to continue to veer left and try to drive that wedge because they think there's a political benefit to them, which there's not. So when you look at what we accomplished in President Trump's administration, we recognize the Golan Heights, something that no one ever thought we could. We fought the UN, you talk about the United Nations and the anti-Semitism that comes out of there. We fought that tooth and nail. We withdrew from the horrendous Iran deal. I mean, we have a record of accomplishment of what we did over those 4 years.
The Abraham Accords.
Abraham Accords, even during the December and January of 2020 and 2021, countries were coming out and normalizing, making peace and normalizing relations with Israel. That relationship is under siege because you have unelected bureaucrats in the White House dragging the country as far left as they possibly can. Congress has a unique ability to check and balance them, and that's what this next Congress must do.
Moving to, if not the number one topic, the number two topic, and staying kind of focused on Congress. Congress passed H.R. 2, but we now have 3 years of open borders. There are more illegal aliens in America than there are citizens in the state of Georgia now. And it impacts us locally. We have a couple of dozen Carroll Canyons die each year of fentanyl poisoning, burden on state, local governments, danger to citizens. The question is, though, with 11 million plus in this kind of situation, is America going to ever really be able to recover from this, or are we permanently changed?
So this Congress has the unique ability to solve this problem, and here's how we should do it. President Trump mentions this a lot, and I think this should encourage every single one of your listeners. In 2023, I remember we were flying to Iowa for a campaign rally. We had a conversation about, at the time, you know, the liberal media tried to decry as a pie-in-the-sky idea, but President Trump has said on day one he wants to begin the largest domestic deportation operation in our country's history.
Is that possible?
With President Trump in office and with a Congress willing to ensure that he has the tools to effectuate that, it absolutely is. And I think, secondly, what we've got to look at is we have to cut off this incentive structure that rewards illegal immigration that Joe Biden has unlocked the last 3 years. This incentive structure, when you talk about 17 million illegal immigrants in our country, more than our fellow citizens in the state of Georgia, that's 17 million Democrat votes to the Democrats. They recognize that if they run on our policy platforms, we will beat them every single time. So how can they fix that? They've got to figure out, oh, well, let's go import more votes. And that's exactly what's happening. 17 million illegal immigrants equals 17 million Democrat votes. If you're an illegal immigrant in Michigan or Wisconsin today, you can go into your social service center and you're going to be handed a voter registration form. And you're going to be encouraged to fill out that registration form and go vote in November. There should be federal legislation that mandates that you must prove you're an American citizen in order to vote in an American election.
That's the SAFE Act.
There's a whole lot of other ideas on it, some that adjust to and how it should go. But at the end of the day, we should prove that we're American citizens if we vote in American elections.
We have to do there that is, if we get a passport, I believe.
There's some other ideas on that, social security cards and what have you. But I will tell you, at the end of the day, we have a challenge and a problem because there is an incentive structure. If you're an illegal immigrant, look at this. Here's a statistic that people should remember. You mentioned some of the problems with fentanyl. When you drive into the parking lot, fentanyl stops here. I mean, it's an incredible thing that you do. But when you look at what's happening, you've got in Venezuela, murders are down 66%. They have the lowest crime rate they've had in forever. It's because a lot of those guys are coming through the southern border. And then you mentioned fentanyl, right? What's happening with fentanyl? Fentanyl is coming through our southern border. Where is it being manufactured? It's being manufactured China. In China. And why is it being manufactured in China? They see this long-range view, 40, 50 years from now, they want to see our country continually destroyed. We've got enemies at the gate. We have to be strong. We have to enact a policy that not just secures our border, but protects our citizens from threats and ensures that they're only Americans living in America.
Let's move on to inflation. Inflation overall for the last 3 years estimated to be 19%. I believe that includes fuel and food. Article 1, Section 7 of the Constitution says all revenue bills will originate in the House, commonly referred to as power of the purse. So it seems like the House could fix this with a balanced budget, but it seems like Congress continues with what I would call a scam of these continuing resolutions. How do you view the budget process in the House and the power of the purse?
Well, I think the power of the purse was designed by our founders, vis-a-vis the Constitution, to ensure that our executive branch would be checked and balanced by legislative branch. The Congress has the power of the purse and the power of the subpoena to hold the executive branch accountable. And when it comes to what we're seeing today, people are frustrated. Your listeners are frustrated. You see every single September or March and April, you have these manufactured crises in which you've got to do everything you can. You know, they push Republicans to say, hey, you've got to vote this way in order to solve a problem. I think at the end of the day, what we should do is single subject spending bills. We should ensure that Congress has a vote on every single appropriations bill that comes down the pipeline. And I think at the same time, too, we've got to look at ways to address inflation. You mentioned inflation. Every single person experiences it. You go to Publix, you go shopping. It's a challenge for every single one of us. And how can we do that? Well, there are three things I think we can do. We can first and foremost unleash America's energy potential. Every single thing has an energy cost associated with it today. Us having this conversation on air, there's an energy cost associated with this conversation. We've got to drive down America's, we've got to unleash America's energy production and drive down energy costs to help fix inflation. Second thing we should do is deregulate. In President Trump's administration, I was tasked with working with across the administration to ensure that we met our campaign promise to cut two regulations for every regulation on the books. How did we do? How was our report card? We cut eight regulations for every regulation on the books. Last thing, to your point, we got to rein in government spending. If we unleash America's energy potential, if we deregulate and rein in government spending, we can reverse inflation and ensure we return to the booming economy under President Trump.
We've heard for many years now about the swamp, the deep state. The way I look at it is basically the administrative state started under Woodrow Wilson to bring more power to the executive branch, and then you combine that with the military-industrial complex, the intelligence community, then I think you can really call it a deep state. We hear that Trump intends to, if elected, he intends to fire 4,000 top level bureaucrats. Is that true? And if so, is that doable?
Absolutely. You'll hear a lot about Schedule F appointments, which are, you know, effectively just to help educate, you know, everybody that may be listening on this. If you serve in the, when I served in the White House, I could have been fired at will any day. I served the American people working for President Trump for 4 years. And some of my colleagues did get fired. You know, at the end of the day, they were judged by their performance and the president rendered a decision as to whether or not they should be continuing on in their roles. If you can get fired at the White House, why can't you get fired when you're working at an agency or department across the federal government? It's because these got these, you know, powerful employee unions that have these stringent civil service protections that make it far more difficult for us to hold those administration employees accountable. So you can do that through legislation mandating different classes in civil service, and Schedule F is something you'll hear a lot about that enables employees of the federal government to be fired if they're not doing their jobs. And I think all of us are judged by that every single day in our daily lives. But to take it a step further, you know, I think we had some really interesting ideas during President Trump's administration. I remember very fondly, and I mentioned this on the campaign trail, an idea we had that I was very proud to work to enact. In 2019 and 2020, we did something unique. We started moving departments and agencies out of Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. Because invariably, if you're looking to hire someone and you're at an agency or department in D.C., you're looking to hire locally. Your workforce in Washington, D.C. is 95% Democrat, 96% Democrat, depending on, you know, when you survey it. So how are you going to get conservative policy if you're pulling from a workforce that's 96% Democrat? We moved a key agency from the Department of the Interior to Colorado. And you know how I know it was successful? As soon as we did it, there were exposés and hit pieces on that decision. And as soon as Joe Biden came into office, he yanked that department agency back to D.C.
And Colorado's a blue state.
And well, in this part of Colorado wasn't so blue. But to your point, you know, it's probably 50-50. And ultimately, yeah, you got better policy out there. They want policy to be made in the swamp and that unelected. And the other thing I'll say about unelected bureaucrats, the challenge here is they feel there's no recourse. There's going to be no accountability. And you're going to, when Joe Biden loses this November, many of his administration appointees will do something called burrowing in. They will transition from political appointees to civil appointees or civil service appointees. And they're going to, and they will do everything they can to put up roadblocks and ensure that Joe Biden's administration, you know, the policies continue. We've got to stop that. And we've got to do that vis-a-vis accountability. Congress has the unique ability, not just with the power of the purse, but the power of the subpoena to hold the administration accountable.
Our guest this morning is Brian Jack. He's a candidate for, in the Republican primary for Congress, District 3. We'll be back with more of Brian after this.
Health is a journey. It's making better choices, even when it's not easy. It's taking care of yourself and the people you love. At Tanner Health System, we're there for you with every step, with primary care, heart care, cancer care, women's care, orthopedics, surgical services, and so much more. We're dedicated to helping you live and feel your best. So let's get on that journey to health. You've got places to be for many years to come. Find us at Tanner.org.
The AP Scholar Journey at Oak Mountain Academy is designed to provide students with a clearly defined advanced placement curriculum track to earn a series of distinctions upon graduation. This journey enables academically prepared students to pursue college-level studies throughout 17 AP courses in 5 subject categories while enrolled at OMA. I'm Patrick Uran, head of school, inviting you to journey with us on the mountain. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Community Voice. I'm Steve Reddick, your host. We're delighted to have you with us this morning. We've got Brian Jack in studio. He's a candidate for Congress in the Republican primary, District 3. We've had all the candidates on, so we're delighted to have Brian in studio now. He gets the free coffee mug to proudly display next to his Make America Great Again hat. Anyway, the news is dominated this week by the testimony of Michael Cohen in the trial of Donald J. Trump in New York. It just seems like this is really pivotal in that if he's convicted, then the Biden campaign will say, basically, who are you going to vote for, a convicted felon or me? And that would seem to have an impact with independence.
So I'm glad you opened with this. So at the end of the day, every single one of us should be concerned when you turn on Fox News or whatever you watch this morning and you see President Trump for like the fourth or fifth week now having to, instead of campaigning as the Republican nominee for president, instead of being able to do that and carrying his message across our country, he's being forced by a Democrat district attorney to come into New York to this sham trial and be subjected to what he's been subjected to for the last 4 or 5 weeks. And that should concern every single one of us, because you see what Democrats do. They pull everything to the extreme. And this is so extreme. When you were growing up, when I was growing up, nobody would think that a Republican or Democrat nominee for president would be subjected to this type of persecution. And I think that you see that happen because you have a two-tiered system of justice in our country, and you have the purveyors of that two-tiered system of justice very unafraid that they'll ever be held accountable. When you have in New York, we talk about the workforce in Washington, D.C., 95% Democrat. Well, there's a theme. In Manhattan, you've got an 88% Democrat. 88% of Manhattan residents are Democrats. So that's from where the jury pool is being pulled. How on earth do we expect them to have a fair trial for President Trump? There were talks at the time about potentially moving it to Staten Island, a 50-50 jurisdiction. How can you be expected to have a fair trial or a fair system of justice when within our polarized country today, people are being prosecuted in areas that have 90 to 95% Democrat representation? It's just not fair. And when it comes to these two-tiered systems of justice, I myself can speak to it personally. I was subpoenaed by every single person that came after President Trump over the last 3 or 4 years has come after me as well. I've had to spend a lot of money to defend my name. And ultimately, it's to try to drive wedges between President Trump and the people that helped make his administration incredible. But at the same time, too, they do it because they don't feel like there's any accountability. Congress has the unique ability to, as I said before, to leverage the power of the purse or the power of the subpoena to check an out-of-control executive branch. And I can tell you, there's no question that that trial in New York is tied to what everything Joe Biden's trying to do.
This is a local DA who is taking a misdemeanor charge that's expired under statute of limitations and turning into a federal case. Is that correct, or is that not exactly correct?
I think that they're trying to prosecute him on a state law, but ultimately, you know, at the end of the day, the challenge is they're going to go through as many legal and mental gymnastics as possible. And it's also, I should also note, it's about political power for Bragg. I mean, he's got ambitions. Some people think he wants to run for mayor of New York City. This is an opportunity for that. They view this as an opportunity. It's unfair to the president, President Trump, and it's unfair to the people of America. We should be able to see these guys campaign across the country. President Trump has said it every single day. He says, I want to debate Joe Biden. You tell me when, where, and how. How can he do that when he's being tied up in a courtroom? It's unfair.
And if you flipped it, I mean, I assume you would agree this is historic. And depending upon which party is in power, who is in power, to use the judicial system in this manner basically annihilates the trust in justice and the judicial system, does it not?
You had, but the problem is, and I get back to accountability, this administration feels, and this is why this next Congress, it is absolutely imperative. When President Trump is in office, we should devote time and resources this next Congress to ensuring what happened over the last 4 years never happens again, and there should be some accountability. We talk about, we open with foreign affairs in Israel. When was the last time we heard about the Afghanistan withdrawal? When was the last time we heard about those 13 service members who lost their lives, right? They will do everything they can to hide that blunder. No one was fired in that ordeal, and there's no accountability. So I look at that. I look at the Secretary of Defense who went missing. Lloyd Austin went missing for like 2 weeks. Nobody knew where he was. There was no accountability. There needs to be more accountability. Our next Congress has the unique ability to leverage that accountability upon everybody that has done so much destruction to our country over the last 3.5 years.
It was the Afghanistan withdrawal when President Biden's popularity started to diminish, really, back then.
And it quickly got off television because people didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah. We're going to run out of time. I want to come back to the campaign. With five Republican candidates in the primary, do you expect to be in a runoff, or how do you expect it to play out?
We'll see what happens next Tuesday, but I've really enjoyed getting to know my four opponents, and wish them well next Tuesday.
Poor Jim Bennett was out there by himself.
And I say it all the time, Jim. I say it all the time, and he would tell you the same thing. I say it publicly often that he It's a brave thing to run against an incumbent. He did it. I have nothing but nice things to say about him and his family.
He's facing two former state senators, one former state rep, and the political advisor to President Donald Trump. Wow. It's a big change.
WLBB, Carrollton.
Let me ask you about this district. We started out mentioning the diversity of the district in the terms of rural versus urban. What are the constituents or what are the voters in the third district telling you in terms of what their concerns are?
I think a lot. You hear a lot about illegal immigration, but I think, I mean, maybe it's because I talk about it a lot. I think this weaponization, two-tiered system of justice is really starting to come out because people can relate, right? I mean, you know, you grew up here, I grew up here. Like, used to go into Lenox at Christmas time to go Christmas shopping. Today you go into Lenox and you've got to go through a metal detector, and if you go shopping, you either got to make sure you're carrying or somebody else is walking out to the car with you to make sure you're safe. I mean, that's a very scary thing, and I think every single person in our area can relate and see just how quickly our society has changed. And I think that weaponization of justice is something that comes up an awful lot. You know, inflation continues to be a driving issue, no question. And I think ultimately people just want to ensure, and I hear it a lot, people want to make sure this is a big decision. And every one of your listeners has a major decision to make. And, you know, you only get an opportunity to make these decisions every so often. You got to make sure you trust and get to know and ensure there's authenticity in the campaigns. And I think that that's what we're finding, and that's what people want to see.
That's where I bought my first Beatles album, by the way, Meet the Beatles. We do this with every candidate, and I didn't warn you about this, but we say at the end of the program, if you walk up, when you're knocking on the door, and you walk up, and there's a potential voter, and you've only, you know, and they're busy, and they don't, whatever, and they only give you 2 minutes, let's say, or maybe even just a minute.
Sure.
What's your elevator speech to that voter?
Sure. Well, I'll give my elevator speech to anybody that's just tuning in right now. My name is Brian Jack. I'm from Peachtree City, Georgia, and I've spent the last 8 years of my life working for the greatest president of our lifetimes, President Donald J. Trump. President Trump has endorsed my campaign. Jim Jordan has endorsed my campaign. Our Lieutenant Governor, Burt Jones, a fellow Woodward Academy graduate, endorsed my campaign. So I've got a good network of support. And ultimately, you want to elect a congressman that's going to enact America First agenda. In our country, Americans should only vote in American elections. That's something we can do this next Congress. In our country, we must make sure that illegal immigrants are able to go back to their home country, because ultimately, we as a country cannot thrive if we've got 17 million illegal immigrants living here. We have to cut regulations. We have to do everything we can to rein in government spending, and we've got to unleash America's energy potential if we want to fix inflation, and we've got to end this two-tiered system of justice. And I'll just close by saying I'm running a campaign that anybody that wants to join can be proud of. I'm running a positive campaign. I enjoy running a positive campaign because ultimately I think that I shouldn't have to tear somebody else down in order to build myself up. And if I'm successful in that, then that'll prove that positive campaigns work. I think people want to hear the solutions and ideas that people have to ensure that we can move forward. And as someone who has been endorsed by President Trump and worked by his side for the last 8 years, I would be honored to earn your vote. My name is Brian Jack, and you can learn more at brianjack.com.
All right, Brian, thank you for coming in. And if there's a runoff, we trust you will come back. And we'll see if there's going to be a runoff. Who knows? In this political environment, in this day and time, it's almost possible to predict anymore.
And I'll look forward to listening to some Carrollton games, even though I'll be at the Woodward games, so I won't be able to listen to that. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, and thank you for listening. We thank our sponsors, Tanner Health System, Oak Mountain Academy. We were on Facebook Live, and Joe Brock was our videographer, and we thank you, and stay tuned tomorrow. I believe Philip Singleton will be in the same seat, and we'll grill him likewise. And so go out and make it a great day. You're in tune to WLBB Carrollton.